Sunday Golds is back on the air. Here are Arya Masoudi and Brett Nevitt. It is Thursday, April 4th. Florida State continuing to play at a high level after the series win against Louisville. They win two games against JU, winning that series on the year, and then knocking off Bethune-Cookman as well. Tuesday, Wednesday, five-game week coming up. That'll be the premise here of this podcast for us. We will preview the Boston College series, give our thoughts on the two wins over the Dolphins and the Wildcats. And Brett, for Florida State, the show rolls on. We'll keep this one a little bit shorter as a podcast, and grateful for our fans who have been listening and supporting us and donating and things like that. It's been awesome. But the Noles are 24-4 and continue to show different things as different guys stepped up here over the middle of the week.
Yeah, good start to another long week. You're up to 24 wins now over the season win total from last year, and you're 8-0 in midweek games, and that goes a long way in helping that win total and staying ahead of things and keeping your RPI in a good place. So, obviously I don't think you got what you wanted completely from the offense, but from the arms, I think we've seen only good signs from the arms since that weekend at Clemson, which has been really good. And really, we've only seen mostly good signs outside of that one weekend from the arms, and we're starting to see it a bit more from more guys, and some depth is starting to show, and you've been able to mostly survive not having Ben Barrett for a while here now, and I don't think you'll get him back here this weekend, but I do think he's getting closer. So, it's a good start to a long week, and now you got to have a long travel day to go up to BC, so to be 2-0 to start the week, is you'll take that all day.
No doubt about it. Who stood out to you on the mound? I know in weeks like this, you really are Johnny Holstaff, so to speak, and you're going to ask a lot of guys to step up. A lot of times, these types of games, Brett, allow for opportunities for guys to come in, to be able to show you something, to be able to earn the trust of their staff, of their coaches, and to get better opportunities and more important, significant opportunities as the year goes on. Did you feel like anyone did that in the two games, and who were some names that you think took a step forward?
Yeah, Brady Lauk made his second career start, first time appearing in 2 weeks since his last start, which he had a good first inning in the last start, but then second inning couldn't really find his command and couldn't make it through the second inning. But he pretty much got through it to the extent that his pitch count was going to take him to with 3.2 innings and I think 51 pitches. And you saw that fastball play for him, and it's kind of got similar profile to Jamie Arnold's. I don't know if it has as much horizontal movement as Jamie's, but it has like that late life that rides up in the zone and similar slot, maybe not as low, but it kind of has that same effect to it. And I don't think we saw much of the slider and the changeup, but he did mix in the changeup for his first strikeout. And the changeup isn't something that I've seen from him much in the past. When I went back and looked at his last preseason outing, he'd only thrown one changeup that day, so it was good to see him mix in that a little bit and use it successfully. So, yeah, I think Brady is someone that you need to get some quality innings out of to have a complete staff like we've talked about, and Brady's definitely someone that's capable of it, and he showed that on Tuesday against the scrappy JU team with 6 strikeouts to 1 walk and 1 hit. A bunch of guys contributed, obviously, when you have 2 games and you're trying to not overextend guys and have guys available for the weekend. I mean, Ox had 2.1 scoreless innings in 2 appearances, and I think he's made appearances in 3 straight games. Hudson Rowan made appearances in back-to-back games, and the command was not there for Hudson for the first 4 batters he faced for the 2 days. He walked one and hit one on the first game, and then walked the first 2 on Wednesday, but it was good to see him settle down and get out of that and strike out 2 and not allow any damage in the second time he threw this week. And you got Yoel Tejeda in there, and he threw 3 scoreless innings, only walked 1 guy, only allowed 1 hit, had 4 strikeouts, which that should go a long way for his confidence. Carson Dorsey closed out the first game with 2 scoreless innings. And then, I thought maybe the most impressive of the guys was Connor Holtz at the end of Wednesday's game against Bethune-Cookman. And we've always known that the spin is there for Connor, and that the breaking balls have elite metrics on them. But for so long, Connor had just like struggled to execute it down and below the zone. Just he was leaving it up in the zone a little bit, which that negates the spin when it's up in the zone and hittable. And But when he gets it down and below the zone, it hitters, no matter who you're facing, if it's Bethune-Cookman, Florida, anybody, like it's going to be really hard to pick up on that breaking ball with the spin that he gets on it. I mean, it's 3,000 plus RPMs, and he's going to snap it down. So it's really good to see him do it repetitively on Wednesday for two innings and two perfect innings, six batters, 6 outs, 4 strikeouts. So that was really encouraging to see.
And some of these young arms, right, that are continuing to emerge for you, and they gave John Abraham his first start. Mixed results there against Bethune, but, you know, they're going to rely on him. When you go back to Holtz, we've talked about this bullpen needing to be all hands on deck, right? And everybody does something a little bit differently. Their pitches profile a little bit differently depending on the guy. If Holtz can continuously and consistently, so to speak, find the strike zone, that allows that breaking ball to be a real weapon, right? And late in the year, when we're talking about more important games, games that have more significance, so to speak, you might be able to use him as a lefty-on-lefty guy, a guy who comes in and is able to lock down a certain type of batter that Link and Micah Posey want. So all these games are, they're not tryouts, so to speak, but they are, I think they are auditions in some ways, right, for more significant roles as the year goes along.
Yeah, I mean, even like Link talked yesterday about the importance for some of these guys of that aren't throwing, you know, very often, how important the outings are that they get in the pitching lab with Micah. And they might not be extended outings because you want to have them available, but they're short outings that are intense, and you're going in there to compete, and you're going in there to try and execute pitches to show them that you can do it. And then when you get your opportunities in games like Yoel and Holtz had on Wednesday, you got to take advantage of them, and they did that. And you know, I think Holtz is someone who can face left-handers and right-handers because there's kind of two variations to the breaking balls he throws. And like if he just gets ahead with the fastball or gets ahead with flipping breaking balls into the zone for get-me-overs, and then he can expand when he's ahead in the count, and he's going to get lots of swings and misses when he does that. But, you know, it is something that we need to see consistently because that was the first time in a little bit that we saw him kind of do it repetitively with the curveballs. So, but a really, really good sign.
Florida State used 9 different pitchers in those two games, and that's big, right, as you're trying to develop your staff as a whole. And we know what we have in the weekends, and that's going to be a place that I think we all feel really good about going forward. And in the pen, you need to find a couple of arms that you feel like can get the job done day in and day out. I think they're getting closer to finding that throughout now what is a couple of ACC series, and then it becomes guys who are matchup arms and guys who come in and can get you a big out in a regional, in a super regional. Can they come in and give you an inning to kind of bridge the gap to somebody else? That's what these midweeks are so important for. And I think some of these young arms, this is the time where you want them getting experience thrown out there into the fire, because as those games get bigger, right, you're going to need to rely on them. And you will find out, I think, over the next month or so, which one of these freshmen, which one of these arms are capable of being a part of the core of what they're going to use going forward. But exciting. I mean, you held them to, was it 2 games and you 5 total runs were given up by the pitching staff. The pen completely shut down Bethune, I think. It's good stuff. It's the type of week you want to have. We'll talk about offense in a second, but from a arms standpoint, from a pitching standpoint, Brett, I thought this was as good of a midweek as you could have had.
Yeah, like you said, you didn't allow any runs out of the bullpen on Wednesday, and you only allowed 2 out of the pen on Tuesday. So, yeah, and you got the start that you wanted from Lauk. I think, you know, I don't think he was going to go past the pitch count he was going to. I know some people have not been happy with, like, the lack of innings they've gotten out of midweek starts since Connor's gone down, but I don't really think that they're aiming to get, like, 5-6 innings out of one guy on these midweek starts. Like, they're just trying to see how some of the guys, you know, how they're going to fit in and what they're going to do. And they don't want to overextend guys and not have them available for the weekends because they need to have all their, you know, all their weapons available, especially with Ben Barrett being out these last few weeks. Like, you got to have everybody available. So, it's a good week, good start to the week. And, you know, continuing what the pitching staff did last week as well, it's just been, you know, a really good bounce back since Clemson.
Yeah, those midweeks are designed to be able to, I think, boost you into your weekends and later in the season, you know. And I think a lot of people rip on the Gators and O'Sullivan for some of their results in the midweek this season, but they've been completely sticking to their guns on what they do, right? And that's trying out. I use the word trying out. Basically, it's just testing some of these young arms that they have. And that's what Florida does. And I actually think that should be the philosophy. I think that's what Link's doing, is just trying to make sure that guys are getting reps in real game situations. And obviously, you need to win. And here's the one thing I will say, Brett, and I do want to kind of transition quickly into this. I have to give Link Jared and Florida State a lot of credit, because despite that philosophy and despite trying to throw a number of guys in there to see what you have, they're undefeated in midweek games. And the elite teams in college baseball find ways to win these midweek games when you're not going full guns blazing, all your best guys available, so to speak. So got to give the Noles a lot of credit for finding ways to win these midweek games. Sometimes it's by pitching, and sometimes it's been with the offense too.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of both. Obviously, you've had some in there. I mean, both the Florida games, you've kind of slugged your ways to wins. Earlier in the season, you came through in the ninth inning at JU for a win, for the first win in that series. USF, you slugged your way to a win. FGCU, you slugged your way to a win. But Stetson, you went 1-0. And then obviously these two games this week, both pretty low scoring, pretty tight games that you're able to get the job done with pretty good defense overall and good pitching. So, you get wins in different ways, but ultimately a win's a win. And being 8-0 in midweek games is certainly something I think anybody would take after the success or lack of success in midweek games the last few years. But that's part of not playing down to your competition and just having a consistent day-to-day approach and going about your things and mostly just focusing on yourself rather than the opponent.
Yeah, again, the elite teams in college baseball, they have really good midweek records. Teams that are national seeds at the end, if you look at their midweeks, for the most part, they haven't allowed the midweeks to be what torpedoes their ranking in the end, in addition to the weekend series. So, all right, from the bat side, Brett, James Tibbs continues to be fun to watch play the game of baseball. I mean, he is so impressive. Controls the strike zone, smart, gets into leverage counts, can go the other way, can pull so strong, hits for average. His defense has gotten better. He has become one of the best players in the ACC, and I think he's in the thick of it right now to potentially win ACC Player of the Year. He's got to be in that mold and in those top three or four candidates.
Yeah, I think I'd been saying for like the last two, 3 years that I felt like Tibbs was one of the most underrated hitters in the country, but I think at this point that he's starting to get some of that national love that I've kind of expected him to get at some point. But he's played his way to that. He's kind of done it to make it that nobody can ignore what he's doing at this point. And I think he's not only getting national attention, I think he's getting more and more attention from scouts and someone that is truly making himself into a potential first-round pick at this point with the season he's having. And it's, like you said, it's just a lot of it has to do with how well-rounded he's becoming. He's able to hit the ball to all parts of the field. He's playing better defense. His routes, his jumps, his reads are all better in right field. He made another diving catch, I believe, on Tuesday. I think, Tuesday he had three hits. On Wednesday he had two hits. And, I think the first game it was like single up the middle. Then I think like a double rip to the pole side and a homer into the visitor's bullpen into the opposite field. The double ripped off the fence was like 110 exit velo, and then the next day he comes back and goes 2-for-3 with another homer on another fastball that was really, really in on his hands, and he pulled his hands on it and flipped it over the right field fence pretty easily. So it's been remarkable what he's doing to this point. He leads the ACC in RBI. I think he leads the ACC in OPS as well, hitting .421 with a .504 OBP and .879 slug for a 1383 OPS. He's got four more home runs than strikeouts. He's got twice as many walks as strikeouts. He has a 6.87% K rate. I mean, the progress he's made in the approach and the pitch selection over the last couple of years has been amazing. I mean, the walk to K rate over the last 3 years has risen from 0.39 to 0.98 last year and now 2.0 this year. So, yeah, he just continues to get better. 16 multi-hit games, 14 multi-RBI games. Like, it's just been, like you said, it's an ACC Player of the Year caliber year to this point.
And while you were running through that resume, which was impressive, I'm looking at, I pulled up some of the ACC leaders, and there isn't anybody in the conference offensively that is as balanced as him. You might have somebody with one or two more home runs than him. You talked about the RBIs and him leading that. I'm looking at hits. He's in the top five there. Top five on-base percentage. I mean, across the board, he's been the most consistent offensive player in the league. That's got to count for something. Again, it's a long season. It's April 4th. But since these different sites are doing mid-season, right, like mid-season awards and players of the year and mid-season, what is it, NCAA tournament rankings and all that stuff and seeding, for me, and I'm biased, I'm going to say it, I don't mind, James Tibbs is ACC Player of the Year at the mid-season point, for my money. I don't know how you feel, but that to me is, there isn't a more complete player in the ACC across the board than James Tibbs right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think Ben Miller from Duke may have a case to be in there as well. He's hitting .458 with .805 slug and .529 OBP. So there are some. I mean, Drew Burris obviously is probably the freshman of the year. He's having a good year with his slugging percentage and everything. And there's some other guys in there. And Cam Smith is probably another one that may need some of that recognition too. But yeah, I think Tibbs, like you said, most balanced probably. With the strikeout rate, the walk rate, the homer rate, like all that stuff, and also playing solid defense this year on top of that. So, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, at this point, obviously, like you said, it's only April 4th, but the season he's put together at this point in the year has been awesome. I don't even think he's won an ACC Player of the Week, though, has he?
It blows my mind.
But he's just been so consistent. There hasn't been just like one. It hasn't been like streakiness. It's just been a consistent day-to-day approach, and that comes with the quality of at-bats that he's putting together at such a high rate.
You talk to scouts and guys who are doing this for a living to get guys to the next level, and they'll tell you he's a big league hitter. Like, it's professional approach. It's everything. He checks a lot of boxes offensively, and I think that's a testament to how hard he's worked. And I mean, it got hard, right? It got hard here, and there was a chance for him to go to greener pastures, so to speak, and he's got a family who believes in their faith, and they're very strong in that, and in the end, he's just not a guy that's wishy-washy. He's not, you know, he's loyal. He sticks through it, and I think he is also being rewarded for that with this season. It's everything that I think they had hoped as a family and Tibbs had hoped could happen is happening here now in his junior year. So kudos to him and Cam Smith as well, who's been phenomenal. But there were a couple of other guys I thought this week that showed out well. Cal Fisher continued to get the trust of the staff. I thought he played pretty well. And the Noles continue to, I think, scrap runs across when they need to. We've talked about the offense being down a little bit here over the last couple of weeks, but that's going to happen, man. Like, teams are getting bigger books, right, on where to pitch different guys. The spray charts are available, and they're up to date. But this Noles team continues to find ways, and they have response mechanisms, and I think that's what's been impressive from that offense.
Yeah, I do think Link is upset with the quality of at-bats that are being put forth right now on a consistent basis. He was a little upset after the game on Wednesday just with their, like, consistent day-to-day approach, and talked about just how consistent major leaguers are and major league hitters, and how they do it day in and day out for such a long period of time. And like, you are getting into a point of the season where your legs are getting tired probably, and this, you get a lot of games rolled up on you and the body starts to hurt a bit. But the offense has definitely settled down a bit from the start of the season they had. And you expect that with the rise in competition, but you know, I think you also would hope that you score more than 10 runs between two games against JU and Bethune-Cookman. With this lineup, and you know, you have a lot of guys right now that are in a bit of slumps. I think Cantu and Ferro have both been in a slump since that Florida game. I don't think Cantu is a hit since the Florida game, but what you're getting from Cantu defensively, you're going to take that. He's made the infield just look a lot better this year at first base. But yeah, Cal, like you said, started two more games at shortstop. It was 1-for-3 with an RBI double on Tuesday, struggled a bit outside of that with strikeouts in the two games. But I was really impressed with his game clock at shortstop. Like, Link's talked about how much of a gamer he is, and I think, like, not seeing Cal for, like, 2 months, I guess, since the preseason, be out there on a consistent day-to-day basis, you kind of forget how much of a gamer he really is. Like, the way he attacks the ball at shortstop and cuts it down, and you know, he knows that how much time he has, and it's just he's got the look of just like a not a big league shortstop, but it's just like that. He's got that confidence, that savvy at shortstop that you don't really expect to see from a freshman. And I've just been really impressed. A couple of the double plays they turned this week were awesome and were really efficient and were ones I didn't even expect to be turned, and they came in timely moments. So, yeah, I've been impressed with the way he's handled shortstop defensively for sure. And he's grinded out some ABs, but I think you'd want to see the swing and miss come down a little bit. But that's also to be expected from a freshman that's just starting to start.
Link Jarrett was talking about in preseason how Fisher has a maturity and this kind of aura about him that he was drawn to for a kid that young, right? And he had him committed, I think, to Notre Dame initially. And Fisher ended up going and playing in the Northwoods League, if I remember, over the summer, and he hit pretty well there as a really young, one of the younger kids in the league out of high school. That was, to me, the first sign that, okay, this kid can probably translate to the college game if you're that young. And then what you're seeing defensively, I just think he's a gamer, man. Like, he's a natural baseball player. I think the best compliment you can give a kid is an old school, he's just a ball player. That kid's just a ball player. And it was true with, I'm not comparing him to Buster Posey, but the way Posey, from a young age, could play shortstop, could catch, could pitch, some kids you just throw out there and you go, ball player. And I think that's what Cal Fisher is. And I think those are the guys that eat, breathe, and sleep baseball. The kids that I think don't just like being baseball players, but love the true game of baseball, and those are the ones that make it to the big leagues. Because, like you said, it is such a grind, right? Every day to play baseball, and it only becomes more of a grind as you advance throughout the different levels, the minors and then to the majors. You've got to love the sport to be able to hone your craft to be that good. And I think I kind of see the early signs of that from Fisher. And to me, you know, a kid who homers in his first career at bat, that's a gamer. A kid who hasn't played in a while then comes in over the weekend against Louisville and has some big ABs, gamer, right? And like, those are the types of things, and there's a DNA, in my opinion. And I wonder how they'll go about it, Brett. Maybe you have better insight on this with Fisher, with Faro, and Lodis. That feels like a trio you could kind of, almost like a merry-go-round, kind of figure out, kind of like in the big leagues. Sometimes you have three guys that can play two positions available for you right now, and you find a way to get everybody involved to the best of your team's ability.
Yeah, I still think all three will be involved, and you'll kind of go with the hot hand at times probably, and when somebody starts to struggle, then you can throw that third guy in there, and that's kind of what we saw with Lodis. He just was struggling at the plate, so you know, they pinch it for Fisher in that one spot, and he put together a couple of good ABs late in that game and then gets the three starts in the next 3 days. And Faro, I think, has struggled a bit from the right side of the plate against left-handed pitchers, so I wonder if maybe you platoon one of Lodis and Fisher with him against left-handed pitchers. But Faro's also been really, really good defensively at second base, I think, and it's, you know, that has made him valuable for you. And you still feel at some point like the power is going to come for Faro. We saw it flash a bit at Jacksonville against the Gators, but we really haven't seen it much outside of that. But you know, these are still three guys that I think they have high hopes for, and three guys that we're still going to see. Yeah, I don't know exactly who will start this weekend, but you know, Cal has given himself a chance, and you know, I don't think Lodis isn't going to be given no more chances from here on out. Like, he's still going to get his chances to get back in there, because like, you can't deny the things he did last year as a freshman at UNF and some of the things that he did for you earlier in the year. And, you know, he's played solid defense the whole season. He's been out there for the most part, too. So, yeah, I think it's just about giving Lodis a bit of a break and seeing what Fisher can do for you. And, you know, you kind of ride the hot hand from there.
Yeah, Faro can break a game open, right, with the talent that he has, especially hitting lefty. And we saw that against Florida.
I think Fisher's got some like Mike Salvatore to him with like more power upside at the plate, mm-hmm. but like that kind of just consistent like ball player grinder that is going to be a quality baseball player for you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, Lodi's too homered a couple of times at Clemson, right? Like, yeah. That, like he has valuable pop in that bat, and a guy who can change a game. And Fisher, Brett, they really agonized over trying to figure out which two to start up the middle in the preseason. There were times where you called me and you would say, Cal Fisher's really impressing. Like, there's a chance. And there was one day you said, he may start. Like, it's been that good from Cal Fisher. And that echoed from the coaching staff. Like, they tried to figure out who the best two were. Ultimately, they went with some of the guys who had played college baseball before in Faroe and Lodis, but that's how good he'd been, and that's the type of impression he had made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he had been really good for most of the preseason and had shown up in the fall as well and had started one of the games, I think started the first exhibition game FSU played against Mercer, and then started at shortstop in FSU's second game at Alabama. In the second exhibition at Alabama, he started the second game there, and he did well against, I think he hit a slider off of, I want to say Ben Hess, maybe it was Riley Quick actually, who actually ended up having Tommy John surgery this preseason, but was going to be in the Alabama's weekend rotation, and Cal handled a slider from him for a double, I think, and he had shown that gamerness for a while now, and like you said, they were debating kind of going into the year. And I still think at this point, they're probably still debating too. And that's something that you just keep going and figuring out who gives you the best chance to win baseball games as you continue to figure out matchups and as the books get out there on guys and all that.
I want to hear your thoughts on the lineup that they went with Wednesday. First time we've seen it, really, where Jaime goes to DH, Max Williams is in left, and they let Marco Dingus catch. So there were some differences. To me, it read as you can probably get away with it against a Bethune. Let's see what it looks like. Does it present an opportunity for us, if it works, to be able to have Max Williams, Jaime Ferrer in the same lineup? I don't know if you saw it the same way. Can we see if Marco can slide out of DH to catcher? And it changes the look and the complexion of your lineup. It seemed like they were testing something for potential future use.
Yeah, I think this is like probably your highest upside offensive lineup. Like it being able to get Marco in there, and then that allows you to also get Max in there, and you then move Diamas to nine, and you feel like that's a dang good double leadoff, even though I know Diamas isn't impacting the ball really right now, but like I think you got to give Diamas some time to get back into a routine and seeing it every day after he missed those couple weeks. I know people are frustrated with Diamas and him not impacting the ball much right now, but I just have a belief in Diamas, and I'm confident in who he is and the type of baseball player he is and the instincts he plays with, that I think he still needs to be an everyday type of player. But he does need to start hitting more for that to be the case. Max obviously came in there and ripped the homer over the right field fence, which is a no-doubter, I think, 400 plus feet, and that's what Max gives you. He gives you that capability to leave the yard with one swing. It's just with Max, is he going to give you a quality enough at bat consistently to handle a leadoff type of spot? Because I think we had seen, he's not really the prototypical leadoff hitter. Like, doesn't really work long ABs and doesn't really walk much and will swing and miss some. So, but with having Marco at catcher and Jaime at DH. And having both those guys in the lineup, like, it's probably your highest offensive upside. And I don't really think that we'll see that this type of lineup this weekend. I still think that we'll see Jackson and McGuire behind the plate. But it was an opportunity to see how Marco could handle it. But I still think defensively you have two better options still. But Marco is the best of the bats in that group. Yeah, you're trying to do whatever you can to figure out your most, I guess, offensive, your most productive lineup with the pieces that you have. So, I still think that we'll see Jackson and McGuire for the most part behind the plate, though.
Yeah, you're just trying things, right? Yeah. I think this is something in a staff meeting room that they had one morning, and they were like, I wonder what this looks like. And you get a chance to try it. It's a 5-game week. It's the second of two midweeks. Why not? See what happens. And
I mean, it's certainly a good-looking lineup. Like, when that thing comes out there, you're pretty intrigued by it.
Yeah. It was interesting. And I think they were looking. Teams are doing this, though, all the time, right? They're always trying to evaluate different lineups and tinkering and seeing what works best because, again, you are building towards postseason, and you want to have the most optimal advantageous lineup, the way that you think you can impact a game, depending on the opponent that you're playing. So, it was interesting, and I'm glad to hear your thoughts on that one. All right, I think let's put a pin on the week as a whole, the midweek. So let's move to BC and give a quick preview here. Florida State goes up to Chestnut Hill. I guess technically, is it is it Brighton? What's the name of the city? Is it Brighton, Massachusetts? What's the Harrington Complex? Let's see. It's officially, what city do they play in? It's Brighton, Mass, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brighton, it's not Mass. Chestnut Hill, so they don't actually play. This isn't it's near. It's not near campus.
It's near it. It's just okay. A little.
Is it like a different suburb?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, I was just gonna add one more thing. Sure. On the two games.
Sure.
Like Jordan Williams is a real weapon off FSU's bench. They pinch ran him in two games. He stole three bases in the first game. He immediately stole second and third. Like, that's a real weapon, and he's doing his job well right now. He leads the team with 9 stolen bases on 9 attempts, and you still have only been thrown out 2 times this year. Diama is the second on the team with 7 stolen bases and 7 attempts, and Ferro's right behind them with 6. But Jay Will's done a really, really good job with that, and I think he understands his role, and he's ready to go every time they roll him out there, and it's helped them out a lot, I think, just grabbing an extra run late in games.
Yeah, it continues to, again, I think, give you a different look for Florida State and complete team for the Noles right now. I'm still looking, Brett, I'm still looking at where this Brighton, Massachusetts is while you're figuring it out.
I can tell you the weather. I can give you the weather report for Brighton, Massachusetts.
I looked at it, and it's not looking good.
This weekend, Friday is a high of 46, the low is 35, winds up to 10 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday, 56% chance of rain, might have some afternoon showers when Jamie Arnold's supposed to start. High of 45, low of 35, and don't think there's supposed to be rain on Sunday with a high of 46 and low of 34. So going to be a little chilly up there for the boys, so hope they packed some long sleeve shirts, turtlenecks, and beanies, and all that good stuff.
I think there's actually do they call it a northeaster? Like, there's like a storm right now up in the northeast. Currently, I think the temps everywhere are like in the 30s. So
they might get some snow when they arrive there tonight.
Yeah, it's like they get there on the back end of it, which is good, and temps will start warming up. But at peak, like you said, Brett, like they're not going to get. They might get above 50 on that Sunday game.
They won't see the sun this weekend.
No. And usually BC, we talked about this. Do you remember preseason when we were looking at the schedule?
It's going to be nice and quiet there.
Yeah. Well, we talked about BC being a unique trip for baseball teams, especially if you're a team that gets them in your schedule before like the month of May and you don't get them late in the year, this can sometimes be an issue. It's going to be cold. You have a chance of snow, sleet. You have, most of the time, I feel like Florida State has gone there, they've had to play a doubleheader because one of the days has gotten affected by weather somehow, some way. Knock on wood that right now it's not going to be an issue. There's three games, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 1 o'clock. But again, we talked about it being different from Clemson in that at Clemson the environment is unique, the park is unique. Here, the Harrington Complex is actually pretty nice. It's a cool looking park. They renovated it a few years back, all turf field, but the conditions make it interesting. And not having many fans there doesn't bring that sense of urgency and doesn't really put you in a place where your senses are heightened. You know what I mean? The heart rate's not going to go up there because of the fans, and they're not on top of you or yelling at you. You've got to go up there and play fundamental baseball for 3 games against a team who I actually think is flying under the radar a little bit. This is a good BC team, especially offensively.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, your pitchers, how do they pitch in that type of weather? How does the ball feel coming out of their hand? Do they get the grip like they usually do? Do your hitters get the same swings off? You're going to be a little bit more tight. Balls on the inner half that you get jammed on are going to wring the hands for a little bit. So, it doesn't make the game super easy, and you're going to have to adjust, but put on some long sleeves and start playing the game, and adrenaline starts pumping, and you should be fine for the most part. I think you had some preseason practices that were like 50-some degrees, but I can't remember any that got into the 40s. So it's another test of handling different type environment. You got to bring your own energy to that park, and you got to come, and you got to throw strikes because it is an offense that is capable. And you yourself, you got to take care of business offensively because, like most years, this BC pitching staff isn't very good. It's a 6.92 ERA, which is the worst in the conference for the pitching staff, but they are hitting .300 as a team with a .495 slugging percentage and a .419 OBP. And that park usually plays pretty big, and I think, especially when it's cold, it's not, you know, it's probably one of the bigger parks, I think, in the ACC. So you got to go there and get runs in more ways than just hitting home runs, I think, which for the most part, I would guess, is a pretty high percentage of how FSU has scored runs in the last couple of weeks. So you kind of got to go there and produce your offense on your own, and you got to produce your own energy, and you really got to you just got to figure things out in the cold, I think. But like you said, BC doesn't make many mistakes either. 981 fielding percentages is 1.001 higher than you. So it's not a defense that's going to make many mistakes either. And dang, they steal a lot of bags.
Yeah, it's Interdonato, the head coach, came from Wofford. And remember Wofford for like a decade.
They always have.
They were always top five in the country in stolen bases. Sometimes they were number one back-to-back years. That's what they do. They run. He's going to put pressure on you. I think he recruits to that style.
I did not realize Cameron Leary runs that much.
Yeah, they do. They have three guys right now with double-digit stolen bases.
Leary's got 37 walks.
To 28 Ks, and he's got nine bombs. He's a good player.
How does he have 37 walks in 27 games?
He did walk, so I looked it up. Harvard walked Boston College in the middle of the week 18 times in a game. You're laughing. I swear. I thought I was.
Oh, man.
I thought it was a typo. It was not.
The scholars forgot what a strike
Leary
zone is.
Leary walked five times in that game alone.
I mean, shoot. He's got 17 home runs and nine home. He's got 17 game, stolen bases and nine home runs. I mean, but
16-11, 5-7 in ACC for BC. Believe they had their game against Rhode Island postponed or canceled due to weather in the middle of the week after the Harvard game. So they were supposed to have a five-game week too. Kyle Wolf hits .352 on the year, seven bombs, 33 RBIs, 989 fielding percentage, pretty good player there. Cam Leary, we talk about him, and he's hitting .344. Patrick Roche, .323. McNulty's been there for a little bit, .319. Carrer, .314. And then Nick Wang right now, nine homers, 31 RBIs, .297.
I mean, I'm literally looking at the ACC batting leaders, and Leary is not in the top 20 in batting average, but he leads the entire conference in OBP.
.537.
That is crazy.
Yeah, he's finding ways to get on. So for Florida State, you just can't walk, guys. It's a patient BC offense. They're a good team, man. I really do think, like, they just swept Georgia Tech in Atlanta. They've won five in a row. I think it's a much harder opponent for Florida State, especially in these conditions. Like, if this was at Hauser, I'd feel much better about it than going up there. Now, the expectation for Florida State is you got to win two games, I think, at least two games. Win the series.
Leary had five walks against Harvard.
You thought I was kidding?
No, but oh my gosh, I'm looking at this box score now. This is
it's
absolutely
insane.
Absurd.
Yeah, it was 10-9 in the middle innings, and then Harvard's midweek pitching just lost control.
Their starter walked four, their next reliever walked three, their reliever after that walked three, the reliever after that walked three, and the next reliever walked five.
Yep.
The fifth reliever of the game walked zero. It's the best pitcher on their staff, I guess.
Usually at Harvard, you know, if your team ERA is over your team GPA, not pretty good.
All right, gosh.
Did you like what I did there?
You're getting on them now. This has become a Harvard hate
podcast. Their baseball team's average GPA is probably like a 3.8 or a 3.9 out of 4. And yeah, that ERA is well above it. I'm looking at some of the starters here, what they've gone with, at least last weekend. Michael Farinelli went first. Smaller guy, righty. Controls the zone, transferred from Northwestern. Fastball's usually mid-80s to high-80s, and he has a slider and a changeup that, again, he's plus pitchability and only nine walks in 24 innings. So it's a kid who comes out there, and he's not going to give you free passes, but he's very hittable. Older guy that was Northwestern's ace a few years ago, and that's who they'll go with first. And then A.J. West was a name Florida State saw last year. Not A.J., excuse me. John West was a guy that they faced last year. 4.66 ERA. He's a big guy, 6'8". Fastball up into the mid-90s at times, but he'll work 92, 93, and some decent breaking balls. I just think at that height, right, like at that frame, some of the breaking balls can be difficult, and the changeup can be difficult for guys to lay off of. But, Brett, you talk about guys who can hit. Like, guys are hitting, they're pitching. West is .278 against. Farinelli is .289 against. And then their third guy is A.J. Colarusso, who Florida State hit pretty hard last year in Tallahassee. And guys are hitting .308 against him. And he's got a 5.50 ERA, soft-throwing lefty. So you got, is it two righties and a lefty? I don't know. I mean, Florida State should be able to bang this weekend, man. Like, you got to come out and hit the baseball, like you said. And will BC be able to score some? Probably, especially playing on their home park. It's a team I'm looking up. They've had a lot of double-digit run games. Like, they've hit, man, consistently all year. You might have a shootout or two this weekend. We'll see. Important for the starters to come out and get the job done and command their pitches and throw strikes. But yeah, Brett, it's a unique weekend, right? You're going to play a team that's a little bit better than you might think, and they're playing in their home park in conditions that they're probably more accustomed to playing in than you are.
Yeah.
That makes it a unique weekend. So if they get two this weekend, I'd be pretty impressed. I would be happy with that. A sweep is amazing, but two out of three, go up there, take care of business, play like the better team. You may have some interesting games where one gets to 12-10 or 13-11 and you have to find a way to fight it out. But I'd like to see Florida State go up there and get the job done.
Well, and as of right now, it's a quad one game. I mean, BC's, what, I think 35 in RPI, I believe?
Correct.
Yeah, and they're 11-4 against quad two, but they're 0-7 against quad one. But they just haven't – they've taken care of business against, you know, some of the lesser opponents like FSU has done so far this year too. So, yeah, I mean, it's not something that would hurt your RPI, I don't think, if you went up there and dropped one game. Now, the focus, like always, is go up there and win a series. And, you know, if you get the first two, then hopefully you capitalize on a sweep potential. But, like you said, it's just a weird weekend. I went up there 2 years ago. It was really, really cold. And I think we won that series. But last year, Boston College beat Florida State in a series at Hauser. So yeah, you gotta go up there and play good baseball. You gotta bring your own energy. You gotta throw strikes, and you gotta take advantage of BC's arms, and you gotta hit. I mean, they have a 297 average against. Like, you gotta go up there and hit those arms. And I think West is definitely capable. The 6'8" righty that you were talking about, but even he hasn't. You know, the strikeout numbers aren't huge, and you know, he's given up some hits as well, 278 average against. You know, one thing their pitching staff does well is they keep the ball in the yard with only 27 home runs this year allowed. But, you know, I think some of that probably has to do with the places they've played too. But yeah, you got to go up there and play good baseball. It's a 100% a capable Boston College team. They showed that last week in Atlanta.
Yeah. 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock and 1 o'clock are the three games. Quickly, maybe 5 minutes or so we'll spend on this. Midseason, I should say, NCAA regional projections came out. Florida State was as high I saw as number three on some of these projections, and D1 baseball had them at 7. So RPI at 2 right now, good strength of schedule, great non-conference RPI. The Noles are in a good spot, man. And if you had told me coming in that on April 4th, after 28 games, Florida State would be in a national seed hunt, I'd have took that obviously every single time. Clearly, there's going to be some big series that impact this down the stretch of the season. The Noles are going to play some big ones. But pretty cool so far. I did laugh at the 7 ranking by the outlet that decided to rank them 14th in their top 25. Interesting. But what I took away from that is that Florida State's having a really, really nice start to the season and at the halfway point exactly where you want to be.
Yeah, you've set yourself up here that if you do your job and you don't kind of fall apart the second half of the season, that you're going to be in a spot that you could potentially host a regional, and that's something that hasn't been done here since, 2018 at this point. So, I mean, that is something that Link desperately wants to do. That's something that this program desperately needs, and to this point, outside of one weekend, you've completely taken care of business, and like we've talked about, like you could have gotten 2 wins there that weekend too if you just hold on to massive leads. But yeah, I mean, you're still number 2 in the RPI, and you got to feel really good about where you're at. The top 3 teams in the country are from the ACC and RPI, so you got to feel good about what the league is going to do this year and how the league is going to represent in the tournament and how many hosts you could get from the league, which is only going to help Florida State. So like you said, you still have tough weekends coming up with Wake Forest and Duke and Miami at home and Georgia Tech. We'll see what they're like the last weekend of the season as well. And, you know, 2 of these weekends with BC and Pitt, where you're going to have to go play in some some cold environments. So, still plenty of tests in the second half of the season upcoming. But to this point, you've done what you needed to do to set yourself up to potentially be a regional host and maybe even a national seed.
Yeah, RPI at 2 with an SOS of 8, right? Strength of schedule. It's been boosted. And the non-conference RPI, despite all of the talk about, you know, who they played for the first 15 games of the season or whatnot, number one non-conference RPI and a 32 non-conference strength of schedule. That's pretty good metrics. Obviously, they've only played right now 5 quadrant one games. They're 2-3 in those. The sweep at Clemson was brutal, you know, and we talked about if you even just win one at Clemson, it changes the complexion of everything we're looking at. However, despite all that, you are where you are right now, and it's in a really, really, really good spot.
Well, and Clemson being number one helps you. Like, even losing those games, it doesn't really hurt you, but winning them would have really, really helped you in the long run.
Best case scenario, they stay hot. They finish the year as one of the best teams in the country. And then you see them again in the ACC tournament, and you get your revenge. Anyway, nice. That can be a discussion for a different time. Good stuff, man. I think we meant to do a mailbag. My mistake. I meant to tweet about that and try and get that going, but we'll do one next week and have that for you. So 3 big games for Florida State this weekend, and then next week, rivalry week, will be upon us with the Gators coming to town and then the Hurricanes right behind them. So really one of the best parts of the season is just around the corner. But first, the Noles have to play like an elite team. You got to go to Boston. You got to find ways to win at least 2 games. Win the series. Do what you're supposed to do. Get back to Tallahassee, and then let's keep it going. Brett, anything else before we say goodbye?
I'm good. We're good.
Coverage on Noles 24/7 all weekend?
Not from BC, but from my apartment, yes.
It is nice and 72 degrees here.
Yeah, it is.
Feels nice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You do it better than anyone, man. Appreciate your coverage as always. Appreciate fans for subscribing to the pod. 5 stars if you can on Apple Pod. I don't know if there's a way on Spotify for them to boost it. I don't have Spotify. I'm an Apple, Apple Music, Apple Pods guy. But we do appreciate you guys sharing it. Word of mouth. Saw some tweets over the week of people sharing it, you know, word of mouth. And that was really heartwarming. So those of you donating to us, thank you very much. It's going to help us, I think, try and get to some postseason games so that we can be there and cover things on site for you no matter what. Other than that, the best thing you can do, again, is share it with your friends. Let them know. Florida State has a baseball podcast called Sunday Golds. Brett Nevitt, good job as always. I'm Ari Masudi. We'll talk to you again early next week. This has been Sunday Golds.